The game is over. Your Bucks postgame show starts now. Welcome to Bucks Talk. Insight, analysis, and your chance to sound off on the game you just heard. Now to break it all down, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
Well, it is a loss, and Doc Rivers mentioned after the game there's no such thing as moral victories. We're not going to celebrate that we played the Celtics close and had a chance to win this, but did point out all the areas of encouragement that he leaves Boston with for his team. And I think, look, we've heard a pretty consistent message from Doc Rivers since his arrival here in Milwaukee, and that's about growth and progress and how this team gets set for the playoffs, the strides that they show there. These two games against the Celtics on the road, I should say, because let's not forget the Bucks blew out the Boston Celtics at home. You know, there's a lot of similarities. I know this game was different in the sense that you didn't have Giannis. It did in some ways feel a little bit more fluky, that three-point loss that you had to the Celtics earlier this season. But in both of these games, there were games that it felt like the Celtics were dominating, and then you look up in the fourth quarter and the Bucks are right back in it with a chance to tie or steal the game. Tonight, what you saw was most impressive because you had Doc Rivers on the sidelines, and this is what the group is going to look like going into the playoffs. But some of those adjustments, right? Some of the things that we saw, differences that we've seen along the way under Doc Rivers. You saw the Bucks embracing playing small, and that's where Giannis' absence was really felt, in that you knew it's a perimeter-heavy team for the Celtics. And their size with Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford, but you still need to be able to defend their perimeter players. So we didn't see Brook Lopez play in the fourth quarter. For all intents and purposes, did not play. I think it was 20 seconds that he essentially played on that defensive switch. You missed Giannis there, but made that switch late in the game as well, something that was not done in Los Angeles against the Lakers, where he lifted Dame Lillard for defensive purposes, brought in Pat Beverly and made the switch once more. Some of these things, how you get better in those areas. The zone that Doc Rivers said he really liked what he saw from that group. Really thought the zone slowed down the Celtics and confused them, left them a little bit more hesitant. Jason Tatum didn't score in the fourth quarter, basically was absent there. And Doc Rivers credited the zone, but we've heard this a number of times already in the, 23 games, I believe, now that Doc Rivers has coached this team. The way they fought back, and this game, as I mentioned, the first matchup in Boston, double-digit lead for a majority of the game. That's what tonight was, too. Celtics grabbed a double-digit lead late in the first quarter, and it seemingly sat there until 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Bucks kept fighting back and trying new things, throwing out zone looks, did not go away. And a lot of these issues, as Doc said, they were self-inflicted. This wasn't just, hey, you're without Giannis, you're not going to win. You don't have enough talent. It's a huge loss, and you need to be firing on all cylinders against a team as good as the Celtics are when you don't have Giannis. But that's the other thing, as crazy as it may seem, that was probably the most encouraging part of this, was some of those struggles, a lot of those struggles, we should say, self-inflicted. You take away those turnovers. You clean up some of that rebounding. You find those open shooters. Maybe if you go to the zone earlier. All of these things, some of the possessions that Doc Rivers questioned. Look, I don't think we had good possessions offensively or defensively. Self-inflicted wounds here that made this a different game when they cleaned those up in the fourth quarter. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. As look, there are no moral victories, as Doc was quick to point out. As he said, we lost the battle, but we will fight the war in the postseason. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll hear your thoughts on this performance. Some interesting stats to throw out there in relation to Bobby Portis and Damian Lillard. We'll hear from you after this on Bucks Talk.
You're listening to Bucks Talk. The round ball repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
Bucks come up just short in Boston in a game down two big stars. No Giannis for the Bucks. No Drew Holiday for the Celtics. It's a trade I'm sure the Celtics will make 10 times out of 10. If it means we catch the Bucks without Giannis, sure, we'll take Drew Holiday and Sam Hauser off the floor. But a very, very encouraging fourth quarter for this Bucks team. A couple of discouraging things, as we've gotten to before, and I think just big picture, is not having Giannis in this game. You really wanted that litmus test to see how you could match up with this Celtics team. You got one game left against Boston. That is game number, I think, 79 for the Bucks. I believe it's the same for the Celtics. Their magic number right now, I believe, is 3. They're going to have the one seed clinched by the time that game is played. And you do wonder who's going to be on the floor in that game for the Celtics. And also, I think the larger question, you know, not so much to the levels that we'll see in football, but I do think there's wrinkles from both sides, from the Bucks side, from the Celtics side, that you maybe want to keep close to the vest. You don't want to display yet, knowing, look, there's a good chance we could be facing this team in the postseason. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with our pal, Dick, in Port Washington. What are your thoughts on this one tonight, Dick?
Well, I've got several points. First of all, everyone's talking about Boston being so great. They're 26-1 versus sub 500 teams, and I think the average victory they had was over 10. That's one. Two, if Giannis is playing tonight, Porzingis doesn't get that rebound, I don't think. Okay. Three, we all coached them. Going to the small lineup was brilliant. And this has got to put doubt in Boston's mind. And the fourth thing I'm going to say, and I want to hear all your responses, is I wouldn't play Middleton or Giannis tomorrow night. Doc has said earlier, or maybe it was today, he doesn't really care where the seedings are because you got to win anyway. And everyone, I think, makes too much noise about where you're seated. If you're good enough, you're going to win. If you're not, you're not going to win.
Yeah.
With that said, I'll take Indiana over Miami. I just do not want to face Miami again. So what do you say? What do you think of my comments?
Well, let me ask you this. If I told you, I agree with you. I think we would all kind of circle Orlando, as I think the Bucks are not alone there, that all teams would say, well, the Magic are the team we'd love to play in the first round. Sure, they got a great defense, but where's the scoring going to come from? And it's a young team that doesn't have a whole lot of postseason experience, players and coach, and Jamal Mosley. But let me ask you this, Dick. I think we're all terrified, and rightfully so, the Miami Heat. You know, they may not be the same team they were a year ago. We said the exact same thing last year, and look what happened. But who would you rather not see in the first round, the Miami Heat or the Philadelphia 76ers, with a recently returning Joel Embiid?
Okay, I've got a thought on that, too. You know, he's a big guy. He has not been able to stay in shape. Has not been able to stay in shape for NBA shape. And he's a big guy, and he's got a big hunger. It's going to take him a while to get in shape.
He's not going to be 100%.
No, he's not going to be 100%. And he's a guy that part of his injury problems, I think, and I think if you listen to the Talking Heads, they've said this, is that he's big for his body. And that might sound really stupid, but look at the injuries he's had. It's always because he's pounding his body so much. So I wouldn't mind playing Philly. I'd sooner play Philly than Miami.
It's going to be an interesting conundrum. I think it's hard to believe that Joel Embiid would be 100%, but just the threat of the Joel Embiid we saw earlier this season, it was like a cheat code offensively, and that's something you're going to have to contend with and what it does for Tyrese Maxey. So it is certainly a suboptimal first-round matchup. But I'm with you too, that, you know, the Indiana Pacers, we can point to the 1-4 record against Indiana It also has the asterisk of it was a different head coach. It's been a different Bucks team and especially Bucks defense since those five games were played. And also, you know, Tyrese Halliburton, since coming back from the injury, he has not been the same guy. His shot has not been falling the same, and that changes everything.
No. Yeah, but the bigger thing is the guy off the bench, and I can't remember his name. He's done for the year. He's not going to play.
Benedict Mathurin.
Yeah, Mathurin. And he killed us. And I'm not a believer in the Oshkosh North, South, East, West, whatever he played for in high school. I just don't see him performing in the playoffs the same way. When the pressure's off, yeah, he can dance around, shoot the ball and everything, okay. When it's the whole game is different in the playoffs than it is in the regular season. And he hasn't experienced it. So let's see what happens. I take Philly over Miami. I take Indiana over Philly. So that's my thought.
I think your point about Boston, it's fair to point out the Celtics have beaten up on a lot of bad teams. They've beaten good teams, though. It's not to say that record is only inflated by beating those sub-500 teams. But, you know, look, we learned this firsthand. And I think the fair thing to point out is we had a lot of the same questions about the Bucks the year they won the championship, too. If this is an unproven team. This is a team that hasn't done it in the playoffs. And they went on to win a title. But you can make the same points about Boston. They've gone on these deep runs. They got to one finals with this group. I don't know if you could say folded. That's been thrown around quite a bit, but they haven't come up in those spots routinely. And it's all well and good. It's great to beat up on these teams and have these historical regular seasons. Bucks had the same thing in 2019. And look how that ended. 2018, very similar thing, too, that, you know, you got to do it in the playoffs. And there are many reasons to say, I don't love this matchup and to be afraid of the Celtics, to have that amount of respect, the fear and respect, right? But it's totally different in the playoffs. And I'm not going to jump to a broad conclusion of, man, the Celtics just prove it against good teams. But I think that's the one thing that you would point to is, look, I'm not denying the talent that this team has on both ends of the floor, how scary they can be when they're hitting shots. Look, if Boston goes through a series, whoever it is they're playing, they could be playing the 72-win Bulls. They could be playing the Warriors in the Kevin Durant Steph era. If the Celtics are hitting threes, they're going to win that series because of the amount of shooting that they put on the floor and because, for the most part, these are all two-way players that they're throwing out there. But the questions that you would have are, number one, with some of those players individually, you know, we haven't seen it in the postseason. You know, you've seen Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown advance in the postseason, but you could point to an equal amount of times where this team came up short. Kristaps Porzingis, right? But just this team's overall track record of closing things out in those close games. And I know the Celtics came to Milwaukee in a series that they frankly should have won in much, much fewer than seven games 2 years ago. With their back against the wall, they won Game 6 in a fantastic game from Jason Tatum, a big fourth quarter from Al Horford. But you look at year over year over year, they struggled through the postseason that year, that series against the Bucks. They made it close against the Miami Heat. I think they had the better team than the Golden State Warriors in the finals. I thought they were going to win the title that year. Last year, you know, they saved the best for last, but still came up short, losing the first three games of the conference finals against a Miami Heat team that was hot, but they were better then. That's the question that everybody is going to hang on the Boston Celtics this year. And again, maybe the Bucks don't have the most sterling track record of this, but that group has a championship. And Giannis, Bobby Portis, Chris Middleton, Pat Connaughton, Brooke Lopez, all those guys were on the team that did that. I think what you would point to is, look, we feel pretty good. I mentioned some of the numbers, where the Bucks rank in terms of five-man lineups with those starters. It's one of the best in the league. Bucks have been one of the best teams in the league against the top 10 teams in terms of net rating. So they've risen to the level of competition. And half-court offense, that's another thing to to not discount. We can point to the 12-11 record under Doc Rivers. Man, Adrian Griffin had a 70% win percentage. Why did they make this change? They're 500 under Doc. You can point to the offense going from second best or third best, whatever it was, to 17th, 15th for large stretches of the Doc Rivers tenure. But when you look at the numbers against teams in the top 10 in net rating, the Bucks have been blessed with playing a lot of those games recently. They are essentially a better than league average. I believe 14th is their defensive rating under Doc Rivers as a whole. 10th in offense. It's 8th and 12th offensively and defensively against those top 10 teams. So as they've played tougher competition, their numbers have gotten better. And the most important thing, if you take anything away from this show tonight, the most important thing is what we see in the half court. Because that's where your offense, you need to have it in the postseason. We saw half-court offense come up short year after year after year after year in the previous five postseason runs. You can point to the absence of Chris Middleton. That was certainly a big, big piece in your half-court offense falling off a cliff 2 years ago. But the track record is there that the way the offense was built, you know, it's not to the Giannis just runs and dunks and they score in transition. It's not quite that. But it wasn't where you needed it to be. You know, you could see the offensive rating be pretty good in the regular season and then just plummet in the postseason. Because really, when we examine the makeup of the roster, Brooke Lopez can get you baskets. The Bucks, and I think they would admit this as well, they didn't utilize him enough in some of those big spots. You think about the moments that they did. Think about that series against the Atlanta Hawks. Think about one of those games in the conference finals against the Toronto Raptors as well. Against the Boston Celtics when Brooke Lopez was being utilized. That's when the Bucks were hanging tough and winning some of those games without Chris Middleton. But really, for 5 years, it was Brooke Lopez you could rely on in the half court when need be. Chris Middleton was your shot creator, shot maker, and shot taker in the half court. That was it. You did not have enough. That's why you traded for Damian Lillard. You knew your defense was going to take a step backward. Not because of Damian Lillard per se, but losing Drew Holiday. Your defense is going to take a step backward. But the gamble is the trade-off we're doing here offensively. It is going to help us where we need it the most, right? You can have a great defense. And I know I've said this many times, the Bucks won the title in 2021 because of their defense. You think about the Bucks defense that year. You think about the Raptors defense the year they beat the Bucks in the conference finals. Those two were two of the best playoff defenses we had seen in a decade. That's how the Bucks got there. But I think we experienced this in each of the last 2 years, and it was probably most brutal 2 years ago in that series against the Celtics. You can come up with stops, right? You can go down the floor. You can get three straight possessions where our defense stopped them. But what happens when you're not scoring on the other end? Right? What happens when you turn the ball over and they're able to score in transition? And it just wears on you where you can do everything to put yourself in the best spot. You can get these stops, but you can't win a game 0-0, right? They don't give out negative points. You have to score. And the Bucks just couldn't do that. I mention all of this because under Doc Rivers, against those teams, top 10 in the league in net rating, against those teams, Bucks were number 6 prior to tonight. I would imagine that's going to go up. Bucks were number 6 in half-court offensive efficiency. That's the encouraging part. That, hey, look, against the best competition, this isn't just half-court overall. Because to Dick's point about the Celtics' record in some of those games, you could beat up on bad teams and say, man, well, look, half-court offense is good. We're beating up against teams that are terrible defensively. Against good teams, their half-court offense has been very good under Doc Rivers, and this in spite of those ratings earlier. Even when they were 17th, I think it was, offensively, just early into the All-Star break, after the All-Star break, they're in the top 10 in their half-court efficiency offensively. So they're scoring, they're efficiently scoring, where it matters the most. Their defense was it going to be second best in the league? And some of those numbers that we saw early on after, like, no. I think all Bucks fans would be the first to point that out. Hey, this is great. I don't know how long this is going to last. But it has consistently been in the top half. And I go back to before the season started. When, again, we pointed out, your defense is going to take a step backward, right? You're not going to lose Jrue Holiday and remain elite defensively. You don't have to be elite because you figure you're going to be elite offensively. You just have to be better than league average. And the number I kept throwing out there was 12. Can you finish 12th defensively? If you can, that should be good enough. I know we've always said you got to be in the top 10 defensively to win a championship. The Nuggets were 15th a year ago. Again, their offense was elite and elite offense in the half court. With Jamal Murray making shots, with Nikola Jokic and what he presents offensively. But let's also not forget the Nuggets were playing very, very good down the stretch defensively. And in the postseason, their defense was not league average. It was one of the best defenses in the league. But I point all this out because, look, if you can sit somewhere around there, if you can be 12, 13, that should be good enough with this group as they continue to get better and progress on the offensive end of the floor. And that is largely what we've seen from this group. The half-court offensive rating has really gone up, and defense has started to stabilize. That maybe it's not going to be in the top five. It doesn't have to be. If it can be close to 10, if it's in the top 10, fantastic. But if it can be close to 10, that's all you're really asking for. And that's what we've seen from this group, which, again, amazing to point out that the Bucks, you think about where the defense was when Doc Rivers took over, they're 19th right now. But all those teams right now, you look at 15 through 19, separated by 0.4 of a point per 100 possessions. You know, the Bucks were 22nd with a bullet when this coaching change was made. There was no thought that you were going to be able to, can they get to the top 15? And this is season as a whole. This isn't under Doc Rivers. You're that close to finishing in the middle of the pack with your entire portfolio of work, including, as rough as it was, those first 43 games of the season. That is saying something with what you've seen from this group. And Doc Rivers, offhand, jokingly, made the mention of this a couple of times. But it's true. You know, I don't know who told you guys you can't defend, because you've shown me this on the film, and now we expect this going forward. And I think that's been one of the biggest things we've seen from this group. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A few more calls trickling in. A couple other things to point to. Again, when we talk about reasons for optimism for the postseason as we move into the playoffs, you saw more of that tonight. Specifically from Doc Rivers. We'll get into that conversation next on Bucks Talk.
The Hardwood Homilies continue after this.
This is Bucks Talk.
Waits.
This is Bucks Talk.
All right, no moral victories was very much the message from Doc Rivers, and it carried through in some of the quotes we're seeing coming out of the locker room from tonight, but it's hard not to feel very encouraged with what you saw tonight in a game without Giannis, where the Celtics were clearly the better team for the first 44 minutes of this game, it seemed like, largely. Led by as many as 21, they did that on three separate occasions. Felt like the margin was around 12 for basically, what, the end of the first quarter all the way until those final 4 or 5 minutes of the game. But there are a lot of takeaways from this. Again, the discouraging part is, sure, you can point to the loss and that, man, the Bucks lost the game. The good news is you got help. The Cavaliers lost. So you don't lose any ground there. And again, Monday night, the Cavaliers beat the Pacers. So you have to finish with a better record than Cleveland in order to finish in front of them in the standings. Because of that win, the Cavaliers are guaranteed to finish with a better divisional record than the Bucks. And because these two teams split their four head-to-head games, the tiebreaker is going to come down to divisional record. Cavaliers are going to own that. So if you finish tied, Cleveland jumps in front of you. And I point all of this out because it doesn't matter about divisional championships and hanging that banner, but it could matter in even the forward line. You know, it seems like, or it seemed like up until this week, that the Bucks, you felt pretty good about that two seed. And all right, Cleveland's dealing with some injuries. The Bucks are starting to figure things out. They're starting to find themselves here. They do have a challenging schedule, but they look a lot better. And it seems like you're getting some breaks here. But here come the New York Knicks. And now, all of a sudden, it's not just the Bucks and the Cavs on that tier and then a drop-off. Now it's the Bucks, Cavs, and the Knicks. Those teams are separated by two games in the loss column. And both the Cavs and the Knicks have a much easier remaining schedule than the Bucks. And the Knicks are getting healthy. They got OG Anunoby back about a week ago. I don't believe they've lost since he returned. They're 15-2 with OG Anunoby on the floor. They've been a much different team, offensively and defensively, with OG Anunoby since that trade. So the Knicks are starting to pick up some steam. You have one game left against the Knicks. That is potentially a huge game. Sunday night, April 7th, at Fiserv Forum, the winner of that game may well end up being the two seed. That game is going to decide who finishes in front in the standings, either the Bucks or the Knicks. I think we do know that much. Even with the Bucks having the head-to-head tiebreaker, you lose that game, you're still going to have that tiebreaker. But again, the Knicks are just two games back of you in the loss column. So that is a very, very big game that hangs in the balance. One piece of encouraging news, though, is, and this is updated with the results from tonight, Bucks still have an 85% chance to finish in the top three, right? So this takes a number of things into account here. Future games unplayed, your record in those games against opponents in previous matchups this season, trends, all of it. I'm not going to bog it down with the minutia, but very, very trusted site. We referenced this quite a bit on the show last year. And they were the first to point out the trends of, you know what, I think the Bucks are going to hold off and get that one seed. I think they're going to hold off the Boston Celtics. Playoffstatus.com, 60% chance to hold on to the two seed right now is what they give the Bucks, and a 25% chance at the three seed. So again, 85% chance that the Bucks will finish in the top three in the Eastern Conference. The big piece of that is prolonging the matchup with the Boston Celtics. You're going to have to beat, and you have to approach this postseason with the mindset of, if we want to win an NBA championship, if we want to get to the finals, we got to beat the Celtics. So this isn't about ducking the Boston Celtics. It doesn't mean you want to play the Celtics early. Now, in terms of the rest of the matchups, I agree with Dick. We can make a little too much over, well, here's what it's at if the season were to end today. Especially when you look at the way this season is trending. You know, Pacers have 12 games left. Celtics, Bucks, Cavs, and Magic all have 13 games left. Knicks have 14 games left. How fluid that is outside of the one seed. Really, I think the only things that we know, the Celtics are going to be the one seed. We know the 10 teams that are going to be in the postseason in the East. We just don't know the order yet. But we know the Celtics are going to be one. We know the Bulls are probably going to be 9, and the Hawks are going to be 10. Outside of that, who knows? Because 2 through 8, separated by 5 games in the loss column right now, Bucks, Cavs, Knicks, Magic, Pacers, Sixers, Heat. Any of those teams, with the way things are trending, Bucks could play any one of those teams in the first round. You could get the Cavs. It is not, I know I reference these statistical odds here, it is not out of the realm of possibility for the Bucks and the Cavs to be the 4-5 matchup. When you look at the schedule remaining for the Magic and the Knicks, when you look at the injuries that Cleveland is dealing with, when you look at the schedule remaining for the Bucks, you could have any one of these teams in the first round of the playoffs. So it's not worth it to get into, well, here's your path in the second round. What you do know is you finish second and the Celtics are going to finish first. You finish third. You won't face the Celtics until the conference finals. That's the big thing. Again, it's not ducking teams. It's not ducking the Celtics. It's prolonging that. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I mentioned some of those positive takeaways. And, you know, one of the things that you had heard quite a bit of about Doc Rivers before this coaching change was his tactical work, his X's and O's. How is Doc as an actual in-game coach? That is one of the areas of encouragement that we leave this game with, and I'll explain what I mean after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk. Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
All right, so one of those areas of encouragement was, again, regardless of what you may have heard from a lot of people about the coaching acumen of Doc Rivers, came from Doc Rivers tonight when you think about some of those adjustments. Now, I suppose you could say, do you want to show that off now? Because going zone was a big, big change. And it changed. Again, Jason Tatum didn't do much in the fourth quarter. I think part of that were the zone looks that the Bucks threw at them and said, okay, fine. We're going to play zone. We've seen the Bucks get more comfortable playing that, but it allowed them to play Bobby Portis at the five. And again, that's why we mentioned you didn't play Brook Lopez basically at all in the fourth quarter. You were smaller, but it allowed you to move around a bit more. It put more shooters, not to say Brook isn't, but it put more shooters on the floor. And you got by with it, despite not having a rim protector, because of that zone. And when the Celtics tried to counteract that and say, okay, well, we can attack Bobby Portis then in the zone, and we'll run some screens right near the free throw line. Bucks changed it up once more and said, okay, well, we'll just put Pat Connaughton there so you're not attacking him, and we can switch a little bit more. And again, I mentioned, you know, Doc doing something that people were calling for in that game against the Lakers, where you pulled Damian Lillard for one possession defensively and said, okay, let's go to Pat Beverly. Learning from, all right, we wanted Dame on the floor, and Doc gave his answer after that Lakers loss of, I didn't want to make the change because I thought we could get a stop, and I didn't want Dame off the floor, right? We wanted to get a stop with Dame on the floor and attack. And tonight, again, you saw, all right, let's make this switch. Dame's going to stay at the scorer's table. We're bringing Pat Beverly. After this, we make the change again. We go offense, defense. I'm not trying to bury Adrian Griffin and say, man, what was going on there? But these are the things that the Bucks were just missing. I mean, you can point to the record, and it was great. Bucks were winning games early in the season on talent. When you look at the defensive strides they've taken, when you look at some of those things, of, all right, here's what we're going to do to the Boston Celtics. It wasn't just the, well, this is what we do, so this is what we're going to do. And Giannis and Dame, if you guys can be great, that'll go a long ways in helping us win. You're seeing some more of that, but you're seeing accountability. You're hearing accountability, too, from Doc Rivers. And everything has a method behind it, right? That's the biggest thing, is we've heard from day one, none of this matters. The process is very important. We'd love to win games. We just got to be ready for the postseason. And you've heard that from day one, from Doc Rivers. Of, look, we got to get ready for the playoffs. I think we'll get there, and you've heard that slowly shift to, I'm seeing it. I like what I'm seeing. We're not there yet, but I like what I'm seeing. And the line tonight, it's not a moral victory. Celtics won this battle. He didn't say we'll win the war. He said we will fight the war in the postseason. And I like where we're headed. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Again, Cavaliers lose tonight. That is very, very helpful for the Bucks in their quest to remain in those top few spots in the Eastern Conference. Knicks were idle and you look at the schedule that's ahead for the Cavs, it's very interesting. Now, the Knicks have a tough matchup tomorrow night as well. We'll preview that one and take a look at the week ahead, the games you do need to pay attention to here in these next few days. We'll do that after this on Bucks Talk.
You're listening to Bucks Talk. The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
All right, so one other thing to point out here is after this game tonight, now I'll add this caveat, in the next week or so, it's probably going to climb once more. But now with that Celtics game out of the way, the Bucks now have the ninth most difficult schedule left. For a while, it was one or three. Now it's dropped down to nine after this game against the Celtics. You do have one game left against Boston, but the big thing for the Bucks, arguably the biggest thing for this team, in these final 13 games to close out the regular season, may very well be the less challenging opponent. So you have four of those games that you would point to and say, okay, these are games you should win. Not to say you shouldn't win games against the tougher teams, but those four games, the Wizards, the Raptors, road against the Wizards, home against the Raptors, home against the Memphis Grizzlies, home against the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow night, and a road game against the Atlanta Hawks. Of those games, five games, only one is against a team that's going to be in the postseason. The Atlanta Hawks are going to be in the play-in tournament. Wizards, Raptors, Grizzlies, and Nets are not. Those four games especially, I'm not going to say must win. You should win those games. And look, if you can win all five of those games in your 13 games remaining, if you can win those games, the winnable games, the games that you absolutely should win, that's going to go a long way in holding off where you are. I think realistically, when you look at where the Bucks currently sit in the standings, again, you win those five games that bumps you to 49 wins. You're probably going to have to get to 52 at least to hold on to that two seed. So that's what makes those games very, very important for the Bucks. But it's a tough stretch. But again, that may be what you need. You know, when we look back at 2021, you think about the attitude that that team had, where it was, we're not ducking anybody. You go back to the scenarios that were in play. We could rest and we could avoid the Miami Heat. We could play to win. And we know we're, you know, if we lose, we're going to have not the Miami Heat in the first round of the playoffs. And we heard the chatter come out afterwards of, you know, to a man, everybody in the locker room said, now let's play. Let's play to get whoever we get. We're not gonna duck anyone. Again, I'm not saying this is what happened or why. You just look at the approach the Bucks had that season, postseason, I should say, where it was, okay, we'll take whoever we can get. You hear basketball gods thrown around a lot. Like, yeah, the basketball gods, smile down on that. You got the Heat in the first round. That was a 500 Celtics team. That was the seventh seed. That was the team. It was, well, if you could get the Celtics, if you could get the Wizards maybe in the first round, let's play for that. It was, no, let's play to be tuned up and ready for the postseason. We don't care who we get. And not only we don't care, we started to hear this come out after the series and after the championship was won as well. We want the Heat. You know, we remember what happened in the bubble where we were frankly embarrassed. We want the Miami Heat. We want to send a statement. We don't want to duck teams. We saw a different approach, which I think was a little frustrating for Bucks fans 1 year after that. There are many similarities
this year to that year, right? When you think about the trade for a point guard in the offseason, and this year, ironically, you traded that point guard for a new point guard. You think about the chance of getting the Miami Heat in the first round, and I do believe, as we touched on with Dick, who would you rather have? Who would you rather not have in the first round? I think, and I've felt this way for quite some time now, I think the Bucks are going to get the Miami Heat. I don't know if that's a 2-7. I don't know if it's 3-6. You can't even rule out a 4-5. It just seems like we are going to get the Bucks versus the Miami Heat. And again, that's one of those similarities to 2021 of, all right, fine, if we get the Heat, we get the Heat. It's a team that ended your season earlier than you would have hoped for a year ago, much earlier than you would have hoped for last year, in embarrassing fashion. Giannis had an injury in that series in the bubble. Giannis again, and it's funny, too, to hear now the narrative shift a little bit in some of the national discourse in the last couple of weeks of, you know, at the time of that series, it was, man, the Heat are a force. What is wrong with the Bucks? This is embarrassing. This Miami Heat team, what a story this is. Doesn't matter who they were going up against. This is a buzzsaw. And I think their success throughout the postseason, that shaped a lot of that, too, right? You look at what they did against the Knicks, blew through them. You look at what they did to the Celtics. All those questions we just addressed at the top of the show of, look, if you're not sold on the Celtics, here's the reasons why. And last year in the conference finals was a big piece of that. How did this team go down as the 2 seed, as the team that after the Bucks went out, man, give the Celtics the Eastern Conference right now. How did they lose the first 3 games of the conference finals to this Miami Heat team? It's funny to hear the narrative shift to, well, if Giannis wasn't hurt, who knows what that series looks like? Because you've started to hear more of that recently, right? You heard almost none of it. There were some voices that would point out, we do have to add this caveat of Kevin Love does Kevin Love things, tries to draw a charge, Giannis falls on his back, and he's clearly not 100% for the rest of the series. I still don't think that's the reason why the Bucks lost, right? It's a big part of it. I think you do have to acknowledge that. It just seemed like everything. It was a freight train that you could not get a hold of. Everything was piling up. It had been a long couple of years for this Bucks team. You think about the start and stop season in 2020, 2019 into 2020. The disappointing end in the bubble. You get, what, 2 months off, and then the regular season begins once more. You go through all of that change in the offseason where you add Drew Holiday. You thought you added a 2-guard as well, only it turns out you didn't. It took time that year to sort everything out, to develop that chemistry, to become this team that team ultimately became and won a championship. You know, I mentioned it quite a bit this year where I'd said, yeah, 2021 – that wasn't until right around the All-Star break. And ironically enough, when we talk about all these similarities potentially that exist between this year and 2021, you know, again, we address the you add a point guard in the offseason, potentially playing the Miami Heat in the first round of the playoffs. 1 year after the Miami Heat ended your season, you played the Memphis Grizzlies in your final game of the first half schedule prior to the All-Star break in 2021. You did it again this year. And that was one I had circled and said, you know, it wasn't until after that game where Drew Holiday hit that baseline jumper, the game winner, and then you went into the All-Star break, and then I think it was a 7-game win streak out of the break, where that's when it felt like, all right, They're developing that chemistry. They're building something here. It looks like the team that we thought we would see. And it felt like it's going to be the same thing this year. It's going to take some time. We knew it would take time. There's no perfect number. There's no way to figure out, yeah, it's going to be 20 games. It's going to be 30 games. But I just felt like it seems like All-Star break. That's what it was last time you had this much change. You know, that year, 50% of your roster was new. Bobby Portis was new to the team that year. You brought in DJ Augustine. who was eventually traded along with DJ Wilson, who, by the way, speaking of the Sixers and potential first-round matchups, our old pal DJ Wilson just signed a 10-day contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. But you brought in PJ Tucker right around the trade deadline. There was all of this change. We saw Mike Budenholzer, the guy who was criticized for never changing, rigid in his ways, makes no adjustments, making adjustments. Part of that was the input from Drew Holiday of, you know, we got to do things differently defensively. We got to switch more. We got to do these things. Changing our offense. Think about how many times you heard the words dunker spot in 2021. So there was a lot of change. John Horst, before the season this year, said this was the most change, top to bottom, on the court, off the court, that he had been through at the NBA level. Wasn't just the Damian Lillard trade. It was a huge piece of it. Bringing in Damian Lillard. Getting Damian Lillard acclimated to his teammates, to the system, to the city. Losing Drew Holiday. And everything he did, quarterbacking your defense. Right? The tandem of Drew Holiday and Brooke Lopez and how that really fueled your defense. Now figuring out, okay, well, we still got a pretty gifted defensive player in Brooke Lopez. We still have a very a good one as well in Giannis, but how do we make this work now? A new coach, and not just a new head coach, new coaching staff. You had some holdovers, but everything changed. 40% of your starting lineup was new. So there was a lot of change. So you knew it was going to take time, and I kept coming back to, it feels like All-Star break. Feels like All-Star break is where we'll start to see things headed in the right direction. And then you looked up and you saw, man, Memphis Grizzlies are the last team the Bucks play going into the break. Wow, this is really matching up perfectly. And then that game happened. And it kind of halted that conversation. But you think about all that change and you think about adding more to it along the way, right? Where not only do you deal with one coaching change, you could argue you deal with two before the Doc Rivers addition, when you dealt with Terry Stotts leaving a week before the season begins, the guy that was going to help usher in Damian Lillard, was going to architect your offense, was a big, big comfort piece for Damian Lillard and a support system for Dame, gone right as the season's starting. A whirlwind of change. And I talked about this after the game against the Suns, but I do think it's worth repeating, is that two very good games now that you've seen from Damian Lillard back-to-back. I know we mentioned this on the Suns broadcast, but Dame has not had a stretch of five consecutive games this season, scoring 25 or more points. And I know there's been this narrative of, do you think the Bucks would do the trade again? If they knew that Drew Holiday would end up in Boston, 100%, for the reasons we talked about a few moments ago with the half-court offense and how important and imperative that is to have a viable half-court offense in the postseason, 100%, I firmly believe, even if you told John Horst, look, you make this trade, Drew's going to Boston. Do you still want to make this deal? Yes, they would. Because I think you got the sense of, we can't keep doing the same thing over and over. As good as Drew Holiday is, as much as he does for us, in the community, certainly on the floor, we can't keep doing the same thing. We're an aging roster. We're a group that's been together for a while. We're getting old. And look, the last 2 years, maybe it's injuries. Maybe it was Giannis getting hurt in that series against the Miami Heat. Everything Coach Budenholzer was dealing with off the court. Maybe the year before, Chris Middleton gets hurt. Yeah, we didn't really feel like we got a chance to properly defend our title. Regular season, too. You think about the Brooke Lopez absence. But you just couldn't keep doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result. But I do also think when we examine that trade, part of the, you know, wow, is this the Damian Lillard we expected to see? People point to 25 points. Hasn't had a stretch of five games or more. Look, number one, nobody outside of Giannis has done that this year. Nobody outside of Giannis did that last year. Nobody outside of Giannis did that 2 years ago. So you see the trend here. You have Giannis, right? There's not going to be, unless Giannis is off the floor, there is not going to be these prolonged stretches of somebody else scoring a ton of points with Giannis. So that's part of the trade-off. I understand what Damian Lillard brings, but that's been the adjustment for both of these guys, for Giannis and Dame. There's more comfort for Giannis than there is for Dame, but Damian Lillard is adjusting to going from being the Giannis to his team to playing with Giannis. And I think we could take for granted or have taken for granted how difficult of an adjustment that is for both of these guys, for Chris Middleton, for Brook Lopez, for everybody. But also, you know, and this is not to discount Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is an incredibly pliable guy. He is maybe the ultimate plug-and-play guy. You could take him from one situation because of what he brings, drop him in, and he's going to fit in seamlessly. Right? Not to say that smaller aspects won't take time to really hone and develop, but in terms of plug-and-play, it's easier to do it with Drew than it is for Dame. It's probably not going to be until next year that you see the full comfort, hopefully in the playoffs. But the long story short here is it's going to take time, but I do feel like we're starting to come out of the tunnel. In these last 2-3 weeks, you're starting to see those things develop. And tonight, I think, was another one of those signs and a big, big step forward for this team. We'll see if tomorrow night is another one of those, but again, we'll have to keep an eye on the injury report once it gets released tomorrow. No word on if Chris Middleton will play in a back-to-back. Still no word on Giannis either. He stayed in Milwaukee, did not make the trip to continue working out and getting treatment. But the Bucks back at it tomorrow, hosting the Brooklyn Nets. That's a 7 o'clock tip. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk to you then.